I'm Lyndall Johnson. I'm one of the assistant teachers here at Seattle Insight, so I'm substituting for Carrie or Tim or Twary, whoever else might have been here. And I'll be leading our meditation today and giving the talk. And thanks a lot for coming tonight. I appreciate having you all here, and it's nice to see you in person. I don't always make it to Monday nights. I have to confess it's because I have my ballet class and I don't want to give it up. Even though I'm pretty awful at it, but still, it's special. So this year, as many of you know, maybe some of our newer people don't, but at Sims, we typically have a particular theme that we study for the whole year. And so for this year, we have a very exciting theme, I think, of transcendental dependent arising, or transcendent dependent origination. And this is the sort of the path that we take when we have the faith and just enough Dharma understanding to start to move off of that endless wheel of samsara and into the path of freedom and awakening. So it has a number of steps. In February, we worked with faith. Last month, we worked with joy. And this month, we're moving on to a second form of joy, which is rapture or piti, sometimes also translated as bliss. And so that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And I don't think there's too many of you, but there might be just a few people who are here tonight that go to the Sunday sit too. So for the Sunday sit people, I apologize for the repetition. It'll be a lot of the same things, but there'll be some new things too that I didn't talk about then. But it looks like I think most people are not Sunday sit people, so this will be new for you. So rapture, what an exciting topic, right? You know, rapture, bliss, ooh. You might think that we'd all be just really filled with anticipation. Can't wait, got to get to that one, wow. But, you know, actually, as I've been talking with this with the other teachers as we prepared to teach about it and, you know, share what we understood about it, I've gotten the sense that it isn't really necessarily true that we're also happy and excited about this topic. This step in the path of transcendent dependent arising can also be a source of quite a bit of confusion and some doubt. Many of us might wonder what this experience of rapture actually is. And we might doubt whether it's something we have the capacity to experience in our practice. Some of us might feel that this, you know, this just isn't an important part of our practice at all. And it's never going to be an important part of our practice. So we're just not interested in it. And if we've had some experience of rapture on retreat, maybe, we might feel like it's just as overwhelming and challenging as it is pleasant. It's kind of a mixed bag. So if you have feelings about this topic that are a little bit mixed, you're not alone. I think many people have these kind of mixed feelings. So now there's three kinds of joy in this transcendent dependent arising. First, there's what is called pamoja in Pali, which is translated often just as joy or gladness. And this is the joy we were working with last month. So it's the joy of finding a path that we feel is really going to work for us, sort of the relief of not being lost and caught up in confusion and delusion, you know, the joy of beginning our practice, of starting to live from a place where we're focused more on kindness and honesty and non-harming. and refraining from harming other beings, but also refraining from harming ourselves. And, you know, just the joy of getting our life more in order. And then after this comes piti, or rapture. And you might think of rapture as a kind of this pamoja joy on steroids, because the energy and the excitement and the interest we feel when we start to discover this practice and start to apply the teachings for ourselves is just really heightened to a more intense level. And also, well, the pamoja type of joy is a kind of joy that we feel a lot in everyday life, and we can relate to it easily as something we can experience anytime. With piti, the focus is more on the joy that we feel in our meditation practice, when we're actually meditating. And most of the time, for most of us, we're more likely to experience rapture in our formal meditation practice. And especially if we do more intensive practice, like if we're on retreat or maybe in a day long or something like that. And in his commentary on the Upanishad Sutta, or the sutta that describes this transcendent dependent arising, Bhikkhu Bodhi says that for most people, for joy to reach this intense pitch that we would call rapture, a commitment to meditation practice is necessary. So we know that each step of this transcendent dependent arising path conditions the next one. So you might think of the pamoja as conditioning rapture to arise, in the sense that rapture is a deeper and more intense version of this first type of joy. But it also kind of conditions rapture in the sense that it inspires us to want to go deeper into our practice and do more and really have a commitment to meditation. And then the piti arises out of our meditation practice that the pamoja joy encourages us to commit to. Now, this isn't to say that rapture is exclusively something we only experience on the cushion. And while it isn't so much of an everyday thing, there are some aspects of piti that we might feel in our daily lives. And certainly there are things that we learn from experiencing piti in meditation that are really relevant to our daily lives and we can apply to our daily lives. So if you're not going on retreat this month, don't give up on exploring rapture. You can have opportunity to explore it anyway, and you'll find there are some good opportunities. So piti, or rapture, is one of the natural effects of deepening concentration. And this is part of why it's something we experience more when we're actually on the cushion doing meditation, because we usually don't have that depth of concentration when we're going around doing our daily activities. We just have too many distractions and other things to think about. And because piti is associated with deepening concentration, it's kind of easy, or sometimes people may get the idea that it's something you only experience if you really do intensive concentration practices or jhana practices. And if you get that idea, you might think, oh boy, you know, this is too intimidating, this is too inaccessible, I'm not sure if I even have the time to do that or want to do that, I don't know, you know, I'm not going to do jhana practice, so piti doesn't have anything to do with me. It's just not relevant. But really, that is not the case. It isn't true. There are a variety of ways that encourage piti, and whatever your practice is like, piti might be more relevant to it than you think, and you might have more opportunities to encourage it in your practice than you think. So it's really true, definitely we can develop the concentration that encourages PT to arise from steady attention on a single object, like steady attention on the breath. That's fine, a good way to practice it, and if that is interesting and draws your, you know, feels good to you, that's a great kind of practice to do. But we can also develop that kind of concentration from steady attention on changing objects the way we do when we do our Vipassana practice. So in this situation, the object might be the breath for a while, and then some sensation arises in the body, the attention goes there and notices that. Then some thoughts arise, attention goes there and notices that. Then maybe the breath is the main thing again. Whatever's most predominant. You know how the practice goes, how you kind of the attention moves to whatever is most evident, you know, the body, the breath, thinking, emotions, the whole meal deal. You know, we look at all of it. So in this kind of practice, the object might change, but the attention stays steady. The mindfulness stays steady. And that's how the concentration deepens from that steadiness and that continuity of mindfulness. So that's also another way that PT can arise. And PT can also be encouraged when we practice metta practice or when we do the practice of mudita, which is appreciative and sympathetic joy. And that happens because when we do those kind of practices, we develop concentration from the steady attention we have on the phrases we repeat when we're doing them, or maybe attention on the individual we're doing the practice, we're directing the practice toward. And then also there's just the joy that arises from doing metta or from doing sympathetic or appreciative joy. It makes you feel happy to appreciate the beautiful things in your life. It makes you feel happy to wish another person well. So this also encourages rapture to arise. So as you continue to practice with any of these methods that I've been talking about, with, you know, pure concentration or just your regular insight practice or metta or whatever like that, maybe a combination of these, concentration will naturally deepen. And when that happens, rapture or piti arises. And there are certain reflections that bring happiness to the mind that also contribute to this arising of rapture. Reflections on the Buddha, reflections on the Dhamma or the Sangha can contribute to joy in the mind and piti. Reflections on our own generosity or virtue. Reflections on Nibbana. Anything that brings joy to the mind helps to encourage rapture. So there are a variety of ways that you can work to encourage this kind of joy to arise in the mind. So there's many ways. You know, if you don't have to do jhana practice, you can do that if you wish to do that, and that's a good way to encourage PT, but you don't have to. You can do Vipassana practice. It can arise in metta practice. There's many ways. So that's a good thing to know. And so whatever way you're doing, whatever practice you're doing, one way that the arising of rapture can be described that makes a lot of sense to me, and this fits with my own experience of this quality, is that as you continue to meditate, the point is reached where the mind is really connecting with whatever experience is arising, really deeply and fully connecting. And this might be the breath, it might be sensations in the body, It might even be the feeling of the body moving through space if you're doing walking practice. PT can arise then as well. And when that real connection is there, you know, when the mindfulness is strong and you really feel that connection, and it's not clouded, just for that moment at least, with, you know, the mind partly there and partly thinking about something else, wanting something else, worrying about whether you're doing it right, you know, all those kind of things, but the mind is right there, then a strong interest and a strong delight arises. And it's like this sense of, wow, I can really feel this experience. I can really feel how wonderful this is, how interesting this is, how delightful this is. And I expect that a lot of you have had this kind of experience or something like this experience, maybe in retreat, maybe on a weekend or on a day long. That time when you might be drinking a cup of tea and you're really tasting that cup of tea, or you're just really there for that cup of tea, or you're out doing walking practice and everything's so vivid and so alive and so interesting in a way that it usually doesn't, like you're really seeing it for the first time almost. Or maybe when you're noticing sensations in the body and you think, wow, all these sensations, I never realized all of this stuff was happening in my body when I was just sitting here. So, well, that kind of joy and delight is a form of PT. Because one of the definitions of PT is joyful interest. One of my teachers, Steve Armstrong, used to refer to it as the delight of the mind in knowing. And I really like that description, delight of the mind in knowing. And he would describe it in this way, that this delight is such that it doesn't even matter what's being known. It doesn't matter if it's pleasant or if it's just kind of ordinary and neutral. It might even be painful. But the mind is just so happy to be knowing this thing, to be understanding this thing, that there's delight. And yeah, just, I mean, I remember him talking about it, and it just makes me feel happy to think about that. And also the delight he would express when he would see that the students would be experiencing this in their practice too. So Bhikkhu Bodhi calls this joyful interest the distinguishing feature of rapture. And I think it's its most important feature, really, probably. So all these other fireworks associated with it that I'm going to talk about a little bit later, I think really they're secondary to this sense of joyful interest and delight in the mind of knowing. And this kind of interest is something that we can bring through all phases of our practice, whatever we're doing. With us, it's with us on the cushion, it's with us off the cushion, we can bring it into our daily lives. So it's a really important aspect of our practice. Now, I don't consider myself to be a jhana practitioner, but when we were working with concentration last year, when we were doing that as part of the Eightfold Path, I listened to a series of talks on cultivating the jhanas that was offered by Tricycle Magazine. Free talks, by the way, just to let you know, you don't have to pay. And the teacher said some things that were really quite interesting and I think can be valuable whether you're doing that kind of practice or not. And one of these was that when we practice concentration with the breath, it's important to develop a loving relationship with the breath. So we're not paying attention to the breath just so we can go on and get something better. We're paying attention because we're really interested in the breath. We enjoy knowing all about the breath. The mind is delighted, you know, to experience the breath. And this feeling of care and interest, that doesn't just apply to the breath, but it applies to anything, any object that we're mindful of. Having this sense of really caring about it. And this joy and loving feeling towards what we're knowing is a part of this joyful interest of PT2. So that's another thing to think about, this sense of cultivating a interested and loving relationship with whatever you are mindful of. And I think if you keep this sense of joyful interest and delight in knowing at the forefront of your mind as we explore PT this month, I think that'll really serve you well. So, you know, notice it. Notice it when it comes up in your sitting practice or anything else that's similar to that, a sense of happiness or connection or appreciation for whatever you're knowing. However it arises for you, you know, be aware of it, notice it. And well, this is something that we might experience more often and with more intensity when we're doing our meditation practice. We might notice it in our daily life too, those times when we feel really connected with whatever we're doing. When all that worry about whether we're doing it right, whether we ought to be doing something else, it just kind of fades away and we're there and we're present just with that experience. So be on the lookout. Notice when that is happening and realize that this is an important part of PT. So I expect that in the coming weeks, you'll hear a lot more about ways in which we might experience PT in daily life. And I just really encourage you, as I said before, to notice when it comes up or anything like it comes up in your meditation or in your daily activities. And if you feel like rapture isn't for you or it doesn't have anything to do with your practice, thinking of it as joyful interest and delight in knowing might just change that for you, because I don't see how we could think that that isn't relevant to our practice. So now I'm going to go on and talk a little bit more about the experience of PT in formal meditation, because that's important too. It's important to know about it and know how to work with it. So especially when we're in retreat practice and conditions are really right for concentration to deepen, a strong, the PT or the rapture can have other features in addition to this sense of joyful interest. And as concentration deepens, and at least for a little bit, you know, the hindrances fall away. We're not caught up in wanting something or aversion to something. We're not sleepy. We're not restless. We're not doubting what we're doing. You know, we're just there. We're, you know, mindful doing it. And when that happens, a strong energy can arise. And this is expressed in the sense of joy and delight I've already talked about, but it can also be expressed other ways. And it might go beyond what we think of as joyful interest into a kind of bliss or feelings of ecstasy, you know, woo, woo, over the top. And Bhikkhu Bodhi talks about it as spurts of mental energy that flood up to the surface of the consciousness and inundate the mind with waves of joyous refreshment. Sounds pretty good. And the energy of rapture can also express itself in the body. And in our tradition, in descriptions of PT, there's a lot of emphasis on these really strong and pleasant sensations in the body. And in his article on the Upasana Sutta, Bhikkhu Bodhi offers a description of these different grades of rapture based on the Visuddhimagga, which is an ancient classic text on Buddhist meditation practice. So in this description, first, there's minor rapture that raises the hairs of the body. Then there's momentary rapture that rushes through the body with the intensity like streaks of lightning flashing across the sky. And then there's showering rapture that breaks over the body again and again like waves breaking on the seashore. And then there's uplifting rapture that can cause the body to levitate, or at least feel like it's levitating. Maybe you're not really lifted off the ground, but you might feel like you are. And then there's pervading rapture, where it fills the whole body. And it's described as like an inundation that fills a rock cavern. So, whoa, all of this sounds pretty dramatic. Right? Pretty dramatic. Waves breaking on the shore and lightning flashing through your body. Whoa. Now, when we hear descriptions of rapture like that, it's pretty easy to get intimidated and feel like maybe this is something way out of our reach. And if you're feeling like that, I'd like to offer some points that you might want to consider to reassure you a little bit. And first, this physical manifestation isn't something that you can really make happen, but when conditions are right, it happens. And you can get a sense of this in the words of the Hindu mystic and poet Mirabai, and she's sort of like the goddess of rapture in a way, if you've heard any of her poetry. And she says, "All I was doing was breathing. All I was doing was being, and the dancing energy came to my house." So it is sort of like that. It's not something you say, oh, I'm going to make this happen and work and work and work. It's more like conditions are right and it happens. So recognizing this helps us to realize that that's how it is for a lot of things in our practice. We can be there, kind of try to set the conditions, but what unfolds isn't really under our control, and things unfold as they do, unique to each of us. And it's also good to remember that rapture is actually a pretty early step in this transcendent dependent origination path. We have a lot farther to go to the place where we really are into true wisdom and true freedom. So considering this, you can sort of remember that you don't have to be a model of perfect virtue, and you don't have to be a practitioner with deep levels of realization to experience PT. And on the other hand, if you do experience PT, that doesn't mean that you've achieved these deep realizations. It's you know, something that happens at a certain point when concentration deepens enough. And finally, and I think this is also really important, is that whether you experience rapture in this physical way that is described in the Vasuddhimagga is not a judgment on the quality of your practice. Not everybody experiences this bodily form of rapture. And some people experience it in a pretty mild way. Other people experience it in a pretty intense way. Some may not experience it at all. And the truth is that strong PT in the body is kind of a mixed thing, really, because it can be pretty overwhelming and it can be a real challenge to work with. And if anybody has experienced this, they know that it isn't necessarily totally wonderful experience. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's got its downsides too. So don't judge your practice. Don't judge your practice. And if the main manifestation of PT in your practice is this joyful interest and delight in knowing, that in itself is perfect. And that's the most important part. If it includes some of these other kinds of things, that's wonderful too. But everybody is a little bit different. So don't judge your practice based on what you experience. And another thing that's good to consider too is this energy of PT doesn't only manifest in these feelings of bliss and pleasant body sensations. It can show up in other ways too. So you can think of it maybe like a phase of rapture where there's strong energy and intensity. And if you were at Philip Moffat's retreat this past December, you might remember he talked about this a little bit, about how as concentration deepens, everything gets more intense. You know, we might feel this intense joy and pleasant body sensations that are often described as PT, but there might be other kinds of intensity too. Maybe really deep feelings of devotion to the Buddha might come up with images of the Buddha. Or some people see lights and colors. Some people see very vivid mental images or fantasies, or maybe memories from the past might arise with so much intensity that you feel like, you know, you're reliving those memories. And in the Zen tradition, instead of rapture, they talk about this intense phase of meditation as makyo, which can be translated as the uncanny realm, because it's this phase where these odd and unusual mind things and body things can come up in practice. And so it could be that in your own meditation practice, maybe some of those things are more your experience than the traditional rapture. You know, maybe these intense memories arising, or vivid images, or strong devotion. Could be that for you. But in general, really, when this strong energy and intensity arises in our practice, however we experience it, it's considered a positive thing. It's a sign that our concentration is deepening. It's a sign that we're kind of moving beneath just the surface things in our mind and really getting down into what's actually going on. And the joy we can feel can really be a refreshment to the mind and an inspiration to continue our practice. It feels like, oh, all this boring and slugging along, wow, now I finally have some relief. And when old memories come up or fantasies come up, it can be a sort of a cleansing process. So we can see them clearly, more clearly as they really are, and release some of the identification or the ways in which we're entangled with these things and have more freedom from them. But because all of this is so intense, it's really easy to kind of get off the rails and get caught up in these experiences in a way that isn't very helpful. Or as Philip Moffat put it, when he was talking about this on that retreat, to get caught up in a way that's not onward leading. And it's quite true that PT can be really pleasant, and the body of sensations can be like overwhelmingly pleasant. And mental images that can arise as your concentration deepens, they can be incredibly compelling, incredibly fascinating. And when we first experience some of these things in our meditation practice, we might think, oh, wow, this is it. This is what I wanted when I started this. This is what I've been looking for all along. Oh, my. We think that that's what we sit for, you know, to get this stuff to happen and over and over and over. We might even think that we're in enlightenment or that we've experienced nibbana. Possible, you know, you can get really carried away. But most likely our teachers and our own experience of seeing these kind of things come and go will help to correct some of our misunderstanding that, you know, this is the whole point of practice and we're already an enlightened being and so on and so forth. But even if we aren't obviously confused and obviously attached in this very, you know, just right out there upfront way, we can still be attached and entangled in more subtle ways. You know, we might have these subtle feelings of wanting this PT or intense experience to happen, or kind of a feeling of, you know, you're sitting there, sitting, sort of waiting for something to happen that's a little better and more intense than what you're experiencing. Or it might be just a sense of being really preoccupied with that experience, you know, feeling confused about it, feeling overwhelmed by it, worrying about whether it'll happen or not happen. Or maybe it's just kind of these feelings of disappointment when you've had this intense experience and then it passes away. Disappointment and worry about whether you can have it again. So because of all of these things, PT really has a lot to teach us about pleasant experience. When we experience it and then we feel it slip away, it's really clear. We can see in a really clear way how much we want pleasant experience. And maybe even more than that, how much we want intense experience and novel experience. You know, I've heard people, teachers say, you know, humans are really intensity junkies. And I think that's part of why this is so hard to work with. It can also be a really good place to start to notice the dukkha of wanting. For example, you know, maybe we're in the midst of feeling this really pleasant body sensation. PT has arisen. We feel really blissful. And then we start to worry. How can I hold on to this? How can I get more of this? And then even if these thoughts are really subtle, just kind of whispers, that pure appreciation and enjoyment of this beautiful experience, it's marred by this anxiety, this worry. You know, you're quite not there. You kind of just feel this, that dukkha. And it might also give us a chance to see how what is initially really pleasant can change to what's not so pleasant. You know, this PT, it's really delightful. But if it goes on for a long time, it can just be overwhelming and exhausting. And we might even start wishing it for it to go away, you know, because it's like, this is just too much. Enough already. Give me some calm. So you can see that what we think is so pleasant doesn't always stay pleasant. So those are some things we can learn from PT. But when we're in the middle of PT, how do we work with it in a skillful way? Well, the Anapanasati Sutta that I kind of led you through in our meditation tonight has some good advice for us and good things to teach us here. And so as you remember, we start out just settling our minds by focusing on the breath, calming, developing some stability and concentration, and then we're instructed to become sensitive to rapture or joy, however it arises for us. And then once we kind of become sensitive to that, the next instruction is to become sensitive to pleasure. To recognize that these feelings are pleasant. And recognizing that these feelings are pleasant, this also is kind of a suggestion to recognize how easily we can get caught in what's pleasant. And how easily we can kind of slip over from just knowing and appreciating what's pleasant into craving and clinging and identifying and all that kind of stuff that is, well, as Philip Moffat would say, not onward leading, not onward leading. So we notice that. We notice that, and then as much as we can, just rest in this knowing of the pleasant. And after that, we're instructed to be aware of mental formations that arise. And at first, when I was working with this sutta, I didn't quite understand why this instruction on mental formations was there, since I knew that this portion of the instructions were about feeling tones and seem more, you know, maybe about the mind. But then I thought, well, you know, this actually does make sense because of all the sorts of mental formations that do arise in the mind when we're feeling rapture. You know, there are fantasies or memories that can be triggered by these pleasant sensations or just because of the concentration, vivid mental images. And then, of course, you know, there's those ideas about holding on to and increasing our pleasure that go with craving and clinging, you know, ideas of who we are as a practitioner now that we've had this wonderful experience, you know, all of that stuff, all kinds of stuff. And a lot of times that kind of stuff seems very interesting and compelling stuff. So it's really important to notice all of this stuff is going on. And then we're instructed to keep breathing in and breathing out and to calm these mental formations down. So, you know, we might briefly go back to the breath, create a little space, steady ourselves, balance that intense energy by something that's more calming. And maybe if we have a little more calm, we have a little more perspective. We can see these things that are arising a little bit more clearly. And so instead of getting all caught up in them and our ideas about them, maybe we can just kind of have a soft mental note. Oh, memory, vision, seeing, or just notice wanting and let that be enough. And maybe in time we're able to see all those intense experiences as just more phenomena arising and passing on. And so we recognize that they're occurring, but at the same time we do what we need to do as best we can to calm and steady the mind. And that can be pretty difficult sometimes. And sometimes it might take a long time. And, you know, if some of these things are really intense or really catch us up, but that's good instruction, you know, to see what's there and do what you can to begin to calm the mind. So I think it's pretty clear that what we learn in meditation from working with PT, we can apply in our daily lives too. I mean, isn't what we're trying to do with all our experiences of pleasant things, whether they're sense pleasures, whether they're pleasures of meditation, aren't we trying to learn to be able to enjoy them and appreciate them? But also to let them come and go as they do and recognize their impermanence. And this experience of PT can really be a fertile ground to explore all of this. And when you explore it, you'll be able to apply it in your daily life too. So I'd like to leave you with just a few thoughts on practicing with PT this month. First, remember that there are a variety of ways that it can arise. So, you know, you don't have to go on a jhana retreat to experience PT. There are other ways and other practices you can do that encourage it. And really keep in mind that defining quality of joyful interest and delight in knowing. Recognize it, cultivate it on the cushion in daily life. You know, really, that's a good focus, a really good focus, whatever other things you experience. And when it appears, if it appears in its really intense and intensely pleasant form, use it as an opportunity to work with what's pleasant and what's really compelling in a skillful way. And, you know, notice that tendency to want to hold on to it and get more of it. Notice when you're getting caught and spinning out on something that's compelling, this story or memory, and you're just kind of going beyond the point where you're really getting useful understanding out of it. And also, don't judge your practice based on how you experience PT. We all experience it in a little bit different ways, and it just manifests as it will manifest for each of us. And also keep an open mind about this element of practice and how it might arise for you. Don't assume anything. Don't assume it's irrelevant. And however it does manifest, appreciate it and enjoy it because it's a really beautiful and wholesome mind state. So we have a lot to explore here. You know, you might need to expand your definition of what this experience is and how it might show up for you. You might end up having a focus this month on reflecting more deeply on the kinds of intense experiences you have had when you've been on retreat or other times when you've been in meditation, and think about how to work with these in a good way and to have a useful attitude. And maybe you might feel like in working with PT, it's like a master class in learning how to differentiate between appreciation and attachment, because there's a lot to be learned here. But whatever you find is compelling for you or interests you, don't dismiss it with the idea that, oh, this practice is not for me. Take your time with it and investigate it. So, thank you for your kind attention, your patience, listening on this maybe what might seem like sort of an arcane topic, but, you know, it's an important topic. So now we have time for some any comments or questions, anything you would like to share about this topic of PT. And maybe first, you know, start with somebody in the room that would like to share, and then we'll see if there's anybody online that would like to share. So you can raise your hand and the mic will appear for you. Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much for the talk. I found it very clarifying to sort of take this experience of rapture off the pedestal a little bit, but at the same time open up to it as possibly a beautiful part of the practice and the path. So yeah, that was really great. So thank you so much. One question I had was around, like you mentioned that PT might arise during different types of practices, like the jhanas practice, which is maybe explicitly geared towards that.
Yes.
Or the sort of hard practices with the metta and Brahma viharas and stuff. Or like even during a vipassana practice. So I was wondering whether, like when it arises in these different practices, does it take on a similar form and does it look kind of similar, or is it have like a different texture or something like that? Yeah.
I think I don't know for certain, really, because I haven't, you know, tried all of these trying to get the experience, or, you know, I think there's probably a lot of similarity. Most of the time when I've experienced it, it's been more doing Vipassana, that it just arises on retreat. And I think that probably if you're doing jhana practice, I think that there, because you're working with it in a certain way to really encourage it, that there may be more of a sense of trying to develop control over it and that sort of thing, where in Vipassana it's just, it comes and it goes and you're not even trying to make it do anything else. If you were practiced, if it arises with metta or mudita or something like that, I suspect that it might have a really, there might be all these body sensations, but also a very strong component of love and joy and maybe mental images of the individual you're practicing with, feelings of kindness, and you know, so it might be a little bit different. It probably has its own texture depending on your practice, but probably some of it would be a lot alike, of the joy and, you know, pleasant body stuff.
Thank you.
That's not a very clear answer, but I think this is the best I can do.
No, it's super helpful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Welcome. Okay, I see. Kamal, did you have a question?
I don't know if I have a question. I wanted to just reflect how appreciative I am of this topic. It's something that's been somewhat of a mystery for me for mm-hmm. my Vipassana practice and maybe an overwhelm, and how refreshing it is to talk about it or hear about it in the community. And I'm looking forward to talking about it in my CAM group.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have a question. I just wanted to express my gratefulness for it. So,
Yeah. Thank you. You know, so I feel like sometimes it isn't really talked about, maybe as much as it should be talked about. And I think, I mean, part of it is because I think the joy and interest may be talked about more, but some of the other aspects of it isn't talked about as much because some people experience it and some people don't. So I've heard teachers say that they would talk about it with the individual that's experiencing it, but not so much with the big group because they don't want people to think that they ought to be experiencing something that they're not, or you know, that their practice isn't so good because that stuff isn't happening, because none of that is true, but people can feel like that. But at the same time, sometimes we can feel that if we have these experiences, we just don't know even how to talk about it, or that we're supposed to can talk about it. So, yeah, thank you. I think it'll be good to explore with your KM group. That'd be nice.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. When you were talking about rapture, and I did not have words for this, but I've had like one or two experiences with this, only with metta practice.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about it, it brought back a lot of the sensations I felt at that particular time. I remember feeling as if like almost like my body was going to like burst with mm-hmm. like a metta kind
mm-hmm.
of.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lovely sensation, but it was, yeah. When you're talking about it, I just wanted to say that it just kind of brought a lot of that back. It was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And that's a really good example. I mean, people sometimes they don't think about that sort of experience arising in metta practice. But I think for some people, that's the easiest access to it. Yeah, so thanks. Thank you for sharing that. Oh, let's see. Mm-hmm. Susan, I see your hand.
Hi, Lyndall.
Hi.
Everybody, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, it's something that I've noticed with PT over time. I've looked back on it, especially at retreats,
mm-hmm.
and I've noticed that there's a direct correlation between my level of stress and the intensity of the rapture, because my parasympathetic system needed to be regulated. And so I had so much stress that the regulation of the body, heart, and mind needed to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a lot of, you know, piti and activity happening. And that needs to happen before there's clarity and insight and the purification, being able to dissolve passion, the defilements, as you mentioned, the past forgivenesses or whatever. So I haven't heard that from anyone, and I just realized that's that for me that was real. Have you talked about that, and is that relevant for anyone else?
Oh, it might be. I mean, I can see what you're thinking, and you know, in the sense, well, but PT, it's a really an energetic state. So I can see how it might be a way in which if you have a lot of suppressed energy and stress, it's sort of a way that the body, as you're saying, the body kind of clears out a lot of that kind of thing. And it might happen in that way. Or for some people, they might instead have the experience where these memories come up and they relive them. But this idea that it's a way of sort of exposing and releasing all this energy, that's really interesting. And I think it probably does have a lot of relevance.
And the bliss enters the body so it can really relax.
Yeah, that's
to that point where effort is less the activity than just the ease into, you know, the moment. Oh, the other thing is...
Thanks, that's really good. Thank you.
In that state, I'll just say one more thing that to keep asking, this is from my own experience, what is this? Or just, you know, being present to it, because instead of falling into it, just being into, I don't know, this land. Thank you.
I totally agree. You know, you really do have to do that to sort of keep noticing what is this, or noticing pleasant, or because otherwise you will sort of fall off into the la-la land.
And that's not helpful.
And you can spend an awful lot of time in la-la land and no, not helpful. So yeah, you're right on about that. Let's see. And we had one more. I have trouble reading this because it's so tiny. Andy.
Hi, I am struggling with keeping my video on because my computer keeps zooming in and I can't figure out how to fix it. So please bear with the camera. I'll keep this brief. I have been going in my head after your talk yesterday about why I had felt this feeling of rapture a few weeks ago that I had, and why I had felt it when I was doing chores in my house. And there was just this like enormous wave of energy around my body, and there's been a lot of adjustment in my life and a lot of things that in that stillness moment, like everything just felt like untouchable in my like system. And I was thinking about when we talk about how a lot of the time this funnels through our like meditation practices, I was like, why did this come so easily when I was doing my chores versus like these very intentional times that I'm setting? But I was also thinking about how my mind funnels or how I function. And I am also a very fidgety person. And I just had this additional layer of realization that I think that as I'm going through my house, doing things with my hands that I'm doing every day, that is just like keeping that part of my body going, but not focused, that I think it gave, I can't remember what you had said earlier, but it gave my body and like the capacity to really start feeling that joy and that rapturing feeling where I struggle a lot more in some of those silent meditation practices. So each beneficial in their own way.
But. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, but I kind of see what you're saying about how, as you're going through your activities, it sounds like you're really focused on that those activities and your mind is there and you might be quite concentrated.
I think I'm in subconscious.
Kind of happens.
Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt my bed.
Oh, no, that's fine. It's sort of, I think that like it often happens to people on retreat when they're doing walking meditation and they're in movement, but they're concentrating on the movement. So what you're doing might be a little bit similar.
No, I thank you. I agree with you completely. Yeah, I think because I think that those activities that I'm doing are so repetitive that I'm not thinking about them when I'm doing them. So it like, it's like that motion and that movement. But Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's unusual for that to happen, I think, but it can happen. You just never know. Okay, let's see. Tessa, online is very active tonight.
Thank you for the talk. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Great. So I had a question about rapture. I have felt it on retreat, and I like when it happens, like it feels so powerful, and it honestly just feels awesome. And as it happens, like, I think because it's like so like sensational and like it feels so big in many ways, it can feel like alchemical. Like there's like a change. I'm like, wow, like a change must be occurring in the body. But is like, so I guess my question is like, when rapture occurs, like, is there something like changing in the body, or is it just like a moment of change of like any other phenomena or experience, or is there some type of lasting impact of rapture?
You know, I don't know. To tell you the truth, I don't really, can't really tell you what the physiology of rapture is. I certainly would say that it's a time when there can be a big surge of energy in the body or release of energy. But whether that creates a permanent change, I don't know. I mean, sometimes people talk about like karmic knots, and when there's a something happens and there's a big like rapture or a big shift of energy, that sometimes they release something, maybe in the body even, that they're holding in the body, and it releases. But I don't know. I mean, it's really kind of a mystery to me, too. Mm-hmm. So I can't give you a very good answer.
All good. Thank you so much for your talk.
Yeah, thank you. This is, I haven't experienced giving a talk and having people just sort of leave. But I guess that's okay, you know, got to go catch your bus or whatever. So let's see, any more questions that anybody has in these last few minutes? Yes.
I have one thought, and it's kind of combining some of the things that people have said. When I've had like the few experiences that I would call something like this, what's the actual the bliss? What's the other word?
Bliss or rapture?
Rapture, right. They've felt a lot like these moments of that I've also had on like psychedelics. And I think a lot about how like my understanding of like psychedelic therapy that is becoming somewhat more common is that there are these cycles that our minds build and maybe a lot of things that pile up. And then there's a moment of a cycle being broken because we're in a unique mental state. And that can help people break through things. So bringing together the fact that like these states of rapture can come like pretty randomly and be very sort of like unique and fleeting, and the fact that I forgot if it was Tessa that was asking if there was like some, it feels like there's some change happening. And I think someone else mentioned that it feels like these come at moments when we're very like stressed. I wonder if that's what it is, if it's this like release that can come about because there's finally an avenue for this buildup to mm-hmm. exit. And if that's what creates, if it does create change.
I think that that's part of it, that its conditions are right in the mind and in the body for this thing to happen, yeah, and for stuff to be released. So it's sort of a mysterious process, but I think what you are saying has a lot of truth to it. It may not always be that case, you know, that there's some sort of a buried memory or buried trauma or buried something in there that's being released, but it can happen. Yeah, so it's kind of strange. Well, I'm thinking perhaps maybe we are ready to close for this evening. So now, just these last few minutes, let's just take a few minutes before everybody leaves to share in the merit of our practice today. Knowing that when we come together like this, there's a force created for good that we can share. There might be a particular being that's on your mind to share with, and you can bring that individual to mind. And let's extend then an offer to all beings. May the beneficial energies that are generated through our practice tonight be for the welfare of all beings, through all realms, and through space and time.